What is up, ladies and gentlemen? Welcome back to Fudge Muppet. I'm Scott here with Michael Drew, as always, for the first Elder Scrolls podcast of 2021. And today, we're just actually going to take it easy, nice and like, you know, in the theme of the holidays, and just chill and talk about Elder Scrolls 6 rather broadly. We can start talking about some of the potential plot ideas. And a lot of you guys ask our opinions about Elder Scrolls 6 all the time and what we'd like to see in gameplay and, you know, classes coming back, attributes coming back, so we can start wherever we'd like. Where would you guys like to start?
I guess an easy one could just kind of be talking about the location and the setting of things, kind of like the time period it's set in, aka how far after Skyrim. Like, I don't think we're going to get like a prequel or anything like that. Not that I wouldn't like that. It's just like, how often do we get an Elder Scrolls game, right? It's like, come on, like, I want to know what happens next kind of thing.
Yeah, I mean, you say it's a pretty chill topic, but I remember when the trailer first came out, it's like analyzing the position of the sun to see where's realistically going to be the setting.
You know,
like, funnily enough, that's actually, assuming they made the trailer with care, then that's probably a good giveaway.
The problem with that is that they sort of said, oh, there's some like Easter eggs in there. Like, you know, you'll be able to tell, like, you know, hardcore Elder Scrolls fans will be able to tell. And it's like, maybe, but I feel like everything was just sort of wrong. I feel like they just slapped a CGI trailer together and just go like, oh, here's some mountains and
so
here's
do
some
I.
stuff.
And when you say a comment like that, you just get heaps of engagement because everyone's like, oh, we can figure it out. You know when you say there's clues somewhere there isn't, so you just give something a lot of attention?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's interesting, and we should do a video on it at one point, but there are all these bits of information from previous Elder Scrolls games that allude to the next ones. Like, there was, I think it's like a prophecy of some guy called Offred Whitelip or something like that in Morrowind that basically talks about, like, the Daedra invasions coming in. And, you know, that's the deal with Oblivion. And Oblivion, places there were, like, a bunch of references to dragons and so on. It's hard to pick because you could, like, go to Skyrim and say, like, oh, look, there's stuff about Valenwood and Cousin Valenwood, stuff like that, and go, well, on the next game's Valenwood. But they did put a fair bit into Hammerfell, I think, because they developed its lore quite a bit. Like, you know, it's part in the Great War, and it's, you know, the Strossmakai Treaty, and then also you see little bits like, you know, with Sadia and so on. I think it's Tanith or whatever could have held out longer if it weren't for her betrayal. It's kind of like building it a bit.
Yeah, there's a lot of Hammerfell related stuff, and not nearly as much when it comes to High Rock. Like, Hammerfell would be a really cool game. I'm happy for it to be in Hammerfell or High Rock. Preferably both, as much as I'm a fan of, like, pick one thing and do it well. If I'm being idealistic, I would obviously...
Yeah, I think a focus on the Iliac Bay. Like, you get elements of everything there. Because if it's just High Rock, you'll inevitably get to points where environments start to look very samey. You know, like going up towards North Point and all of those areas where it's just, you know, it's the whole map is very craggy and all of that stuff. Whereas if you have a bit of everything, you get some, you know, like some like almost, you know, naval stuff around the bay. You've got your deserts of Hammerfell and their culture and things like that. And then you get elements of High Rock. And it'd be interesting to see their, you know, how they mesh together because they've had an interesting history.
Yeah, I think just High Rock would be the worst case scenario, especially because, like, you don't even have, like, the Orcs and Orsinium is now in Hammerfell, like, in the border Dragontail Mountain sort of area. So, like, if it was just High Rock, you wouldn't even, it's not even like you'd have Orsinium and the Orcs and so on there to add. I mean, you get some Reachman stuff, which could be cool. But, yeah, like you say, it would be best if it was, I think, honestly, like, I wouldn't even be opposed, like, this isn't going to be what Elder Scrolls 6 is, but I do like the idea of the sort of Witcher 3 approach in terms of using scale, but for cross-sections of nations. So, like, you know, you had the Nilfgaard invasions and Temeria and stuff, and then you had, like, you know, Redania and the Free City Novigrad, and they're all, like, the cross-section, but in depth, you know what I mean? Because then you can sort of really explore those cities and stuff in their fullness, and you get that, you know, cross-section of cultures, so you get more exposure. So it's, yeah.
There may also be the element that Bethesda feel like, especially after all this time, that they need to one-up Skyrim. And if you think about it, Skyrim had a really grand story, you know, like with all the dragons, and you literally become a prophesied, basically, god. And the thing is, after that, can they go back to a basic, like, oh, you're just a guy who gets involved in High Rock politics, and you can kind of... You know, it's a small... I feel like they will never go back to small scale after Skyrim.
I think I don't know, in the main story, like you can have a big scale story without like the subject, like restricting the player, I guess, to being Dragonborn. Like, for example, like if they did go with the whole towers thing and the Adamantine Tower, big Thalmor mega plot, like you can have heaps of metaphysical, like cool stuff happening there without having to be like, I'm the Sword Singer born or whatever.
Yeah. You know? I mean, if you take a look at Oblivion, that's a good example of that. Like, you're the champion of Cyrodiil. Yeah, the Emperor saw you in his dreams, but you're not the Dragonborn. You don't have an innate power or something you can just unleash at will that's, like, inborn, right?
Yeah.
So you could do the exact same thing, but still have a story that feels as grand as the Oblivion Crisis or as intense. But the other the other thing is, obviously, it's a much newer game. Let's say it's released in 2024, right? Imagine the scale of wars and things like that you could have, so things would feel a lot more grand just visually, because there's 100 soldiers fighting 100 soldiers on this massive battlefield, instead of I'm at the Battle of Bruma and my two guards from Skingrad have shown up, my two guards from Anvil, and so on.
Yeah, well, that's the thing with Hammerfell, is it really does kind of seem like the stage is set for something big to happen, you know, like even though the second Treaty of Strossmakai is signed so that the Old Merry Dominion and Hammerfell are kind of, you know, they're not attacking each other, but it's pretty implied that it's going to happen again. And you've got this kind of vacuum of the Sword Singers were a massive part of Hammerfell's culture, but it's recently died out and the new generations are starting to look at it as if it was just a myth. You know, it's kind of just their folklore almost, as opposed to a serious thing that happens, you know, being able to summon your soul sword. But it just sounds exactly like the kind of thing they would put upon the player in Elder Scrolls 6.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah.
But then I was thinking about it. It's like, that could really, to an extent, pigeonhole you into using, you know, kind of like fighting with a sword. You know, obviously you'd be able to do your own things, but it would, to an extent, force it.
It definitely would, especially if you did a system like Skyrim where instead of word walls, you found memory stones, and each memory stone has a new Sword Singer ability you can use. And I know you could play it, like, say they work like dragon shouts, but they're all sword-themed. You could have a mage that uses magic and then gets up close to enemies and goes, oh, I'm going to use my Sword Singer power, and just get some, like, 15 seconds of, you know, high sword ethereal damage, right? Something like that. But I feel like if you want to make it as expansive as Dragon Shouts, it does start getting silly. Like, you can have, like, this is Fire Sword. This is, like, you know, like, Fear Sword. Like, basically all the different elements or, like,
I think at the end of the day, they're just going to realize it's antithetical to, like, their sort of game mission statement, which is be who you want and explore the world.
Exactly.
And if you can't be who you want because you're pigeonholed, the more pigeonholed things there are to put you in a... Because, like, obviously sometimes you need a little bit of direction, like, to push you along main story or something, but definitely going for something more along the lines of Oblivion in terms of character, I think.
What if they did a cyberpunk, but actually properly, and they were like, pick your life path.
they just
Sword Singer.
I mean,
for
like,
10 minutes of gameplay.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't care if they went something heaps random, like kind of like the alternate start mods for Skyrim, where there's all these different areas you can start from, and you just pick it and then you start. But Bethesda's not going to do that because they, you know, they've, the way gaming trends have gone is all like, oh, it's got to be some big cinematic sort of big, like, blockbuster entry. And I just think that's kind of, it doesn't really work well for, like, you can do it, but it doesn't work well for the gaming medium. It, like, makes people forget about, like, this isn't a movie. The thing that, you know, it's like the classic thing. It's like, use the medium how it's supposed to be used. So, like, what's the unique thing about the gaming medium is player agency. Like, they are in control. They can do the things. So rather than if you're watching a movie, it's like, imagine if you're using a movie with lots of exposition. It's like, it's stupid because you've got all of this, like, visual stuff. You've got all of this audio stuff to convey. So, like, use the medium as it's meant to be used. So I just think in a game where it sort of, like, takes the kind of, you know, interactivity out of it or the sort of player agency out of it, it's just, you know, worse off for it.
And these intros to Elder Scrolls games become so iconic, you know, like, you know, the sewers and you're the one from my dreams and, you know, waking up on the back of that cart becomes so iconic that I could never imagine them truly giving you branching paths, because then there's less people to talk about that start if that makes sense.
To be honest, like I don't mind them having their like iconic star, because as a general rule, like maybe Skyrim amped it up a little bit, but they have been pretty respectful of like your backstory or whatever you want to do, so it doesn't like limit you into who you want to be. And I mean, I guess that's when like with Fallout 4 people got, you know, quite annoyed, like including us, that it does pigeonhole you a bit into being this, you know, person from from past.
Yeah, and I'm happy for them to do the prisoner start, like 100%. That's fine by me. Do the prisoner start. It's become a bit of a meme at this point, but it is really cool. And there are more things as well. Like, definitely agree. Don't have some big predestined prophecy or backstory for the character. But if you did bring back something like classes, that can actually help with role playing more. Right, like people look at that as if it's restrictive, but to actually say I was a knight before and that's reflected in my starting skills, that's actually a good thing. You can like if you look at Oblivion, they had custom classes, right? So you could just pick whatever skills you want. You're not going to be limited to like, oh, this is how I have to play necessarily.
Yeah, well, the problem with Oblivion was it had all of the like minor major skills, attributes and so on, but if you imagined it in literally just like Skyrim, but you just get boosts to certain skills, like imagine everything starts at 5, all of your skills, and then you can boost certain ones, like, you know, select like favored skills, almost like a Fallout New Vegas or something
like tag skills, you know,
more. Yeah, and then that allows you to sort of give you an identity at the start, rather, you know what I mean?
And you can have a system, like we've talked about this before, you can have a system that does facilitate for the casual player who doesn't care about classes, where you do just have it start like Skyrim. So you have one layer of stat altering things, which is what race are you? And they're not going to break the game. Like, you can pick a wood elf and be a warrior. We don't want a situation on our hands where if you pick an orc, you have to be like this barbaric melee character, right? You still want to be anyone, do anything. But having those small bonuses will still make a difference. Especially then, you get to add class bonuses on top of the race bonuses. Mm. Or for the casual, just pick, I don't want that. And then they just kind of like evenly spread it more. Like we had in Skyrim a bit, you know? Where it's more just like your race bonuses and then evenly spread.
Because I'm kind of like torn on it a little bit, because I do actually really like having meaningful race drawbacks and positives, because that's actually like part of the fun is when you go in and you're playing something, it's like, oh, like you feel more like an orc when you're like, I'm gimped in this regard, but I'm really good in this regard. Like, it helps those statistical things and help you actually.
I'll just chuck in a counter then. Well, it's not really a counter. I agree with you. But the way that you work around that is, at least I really like race bonuses that aren't actually like skill based. Because at the end of the day, yeah, you look at Skyrim, it's like big deal. You can get 100 in anything anyway and get all these perks if you want to. So you may as well do the things that they were already doing, especially when they did them heavier in previous games like Morrowind, where it's like weakness to magic, and you can make that like 50%. You know, depending on your race. They watered down all of the race drawbacks and bonuses. If they bring them back, they don't have to necessarily relate to like what build you're playing. Obviously they do, but it's not as hardcore as like, oh, this just affects skills and like you're just going to be really bad at one-handed if you're this race. Like, because that's not really that meaningful, right? Like, it is, I don't know, it feels cooler to me when you have drawbacks that feel more like a standing stone. You know how they're kind of to the side? They're a bit different.
Yeah.
They got positives and negatives, but they're not just like, oh, here are your skills. You're bad at this, good at this. And especially because if you think about it, you don't need that many skills to be good at whatever you choose, right? Mm. So like if the penalty is like, oh, but you've got 5 in all of this, it's like, okay, I wasn't going to use it anyway. You know, it's not actually a drawback that you feel like you'll carry into the game. Whereas when you have a system where your drawback is something like, I don't know, 50% weakness to fire, you've got that forever. And that will play a role, because then you'll meet some pyromancer who does heaps of damage and you'll feel it.
Because I completely agree with all of the, like, the skills things not being as meaningful. And that's why I think they shot themselves in the foot with the removal of attributes. And I think attributes are actually really good, and because attributes are sort of like lines where you can kind of give a bit more flavor, like especially if you can't increase your attributes ridiculously, like it's harder to get them up and so on, where the difference starting with 50 strength or 70 strength is a massive deal. Like, that sort of gives the races more identity outside of just the, like, because those attributes gave passive effects anyway, like in terms of regeneration of stamina, or what was called fatigue and oblivion, but you know, and health and magicka.
That's bringing me back. I remember, how old were we when Oblivion came out? I just remember saying fatigue. Like, I didn't understand how to read it, and I was saying that for like too long.
Yeah.
Too long.
I mean, one thing I'd like about playing different races, it's kind of a bit of a balancing act, because I feel like you want to have it so that everyone can get a complete experience on their first playthrough. But I also like the idea of races feeling physically drastically different. So, you know, if I play a beast race, I like the idea of kind of feeling like a beast. You know, in Morrowind, for example, not being able to put on certain helmets or boots if you're an Argonian or a Khajiit or something. I think it's kind of... I think they may be scared to do that nowadays because they wouldn't want anyone to be missing out on such a important part of the gameplay. But I like the idea of that if I choose to play a Khajiit this time, it's more than just having a tail that clips through my armor. Mm. You know, there's some actual meaningful differences that make that, oh, my beast playthrough is much more interesting.
I mean, I don't know about you guys, but like in RPGs in general, I sort of like the fun is making the choice and having like a consequence with it. You know, ideally, you know, you want the planned sort of good consequences that you want, but it is fun to have trade-offs, because you can be like, you know, oh, I'm a Khajiit, and then you've got max speed, but then maybe you're extra fast than someone else with max speed because you've got beast feet, and it's like, oh, my character has an edge over your character's experience, and like I can do this special thing because I'm a Khajiit. Like, it makes you feel like, oh, my choice was worthwhile because you know, I chose this.
And I'll say this: you can see how weak sauce they've gotten if you think about it. Right, we're sitting here going, oh, boots. Whoa. Yeah. Like, who cares, man? Like, you get your... Like, besides aesthetic reasons, right? Like, you still want to look aesthetic. But boots, big deal. Like, it's not a multiplayer game either. So even if it was like, oh, you know, you won't have the same armor rating, or maybe a character who doesn't have beast feet technically when you make your god character has a little bit of an edge. They have some enchanting slot or, you know, something that makes them a bit better. Who cares? It's a single player game. It doesn't... You know, I like the positive and the drawback style, and I don't think things like that are as scary or like a big deal as people think they are. People aren't going to freak out if they're Argonian, can't wear boots. At least that's what I think. I think it will just be like, whatever.
Well, I mean, like, if you look at a wood elf, you know, some of their descriptions in the lore, you know, imagine it being much smaller, much more kind of animalistic looking, potentially with horns or something like that. Could be way more nimble than the other races. But then in Skyrim, sometimes you have to go right up to a Bosmer to notice it's not a Dunmer, because really they just get, a lot of races just kind of start to look exactly the same without any real distinctions making them different. You know, there are very slight height differences, I think, in Skyrim, but they're fairly negligible.
Well, yeah, the Bosmer in like the male Bosmer used to be really short, like substantially, like they were the shortest in this. They're just, I think female Breton's the smallest in Skyrim. So they kind of like just got rid of it and made them sort of similar height to female wood elves. But like, I mean, I've always headcanoned it as this is the explanation, but sort of like being those like little nimble hunters, like they technically became like the alpha males by being smaller, being able to jump around the trees and stuff, and being better hunters because of it in their environment. So they sort of, it's kind of like a, you know, sort of like an evolutionary thing, whereas actually being the smallest and most nimble was the best for that scenario. So that's why the male wood elves were so short.
It also
I was just going to say, when they leave their province, you can understand how, you know, offspring may start to look less and less like that if they're not dealing with those environments anymore.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, is another way to kind of cope with the fact they're all a bit similar.
Yeah. It's all an evolutionary take too.
Especially in the Elder Scrolls though. You can have like a mystical evolutionary take. You know, like you see with Argonians going elsewhere and changing. You could have wood elves like, oh, these ones are taller here because of this, even though that wouldn't make sense on like our scale of how evolution works in the Elder Scrolls universe. Maybe it does make sense. And I also like just having the kind of polarity of like female wood elves being really tall and the male ones short. It's just interesting. Like, the more variety there is among the playable races, it is. It sounds funny, but it's interesting.
Yeah, well, it's, exactly. It's a different culture, you know. It's like, that's what it's like.
Yeah, no. I think, before talking about all the, like, I would want them to bring back the racial disparities first so that there's pros and cons to playing each. But then before class, I would actually go, I would want them to bring back attributes first, because I think attributes serve more functions in terms of like just potential like builds and gameplay and stuff like that. Whereas like, so you know, when you have a higher speed, like you're like movement speed or attack speed or whatever goes up, or if you're trying to get willpower, like I wouldn't even mind if they like shortened the list.
Oh, they but, have
like,
to even having, you wouldn't do the same thing twice. Yeah. You have to overhaul the attribute system, not massively. Yeah, for sure. But like especially the way it leveled, like whatever skills you used gave you like +5 bonuses and all that.
And like one of the concepts that I actually liked from Cyberpunk was actually the leveling system and the way that the attributes capped the skill progression. So sort of imagine it's like you can only, it's like trying to like imagine you can only get to 100 in one-handed if you've got say 100 in like maybe agility or whatever governs it or something like that. And what that does is it makes the one hand, getting that makes it seem like you are like the top master. In the same way, for example, like if you go, you know, like you, top fighters in the world are like top tier physically, like attributes are top tier as well as their skill. Like it's both, like you can't really, if you gave them two people the same skill, but then one of them's way less physically, you know, good, it wouldn't, you know what I mean? That would be reflected in the world. But it also makes things like, it incentivizes picking like different builds with attributes, and it makes it worthwhile to sort of, do you know what I mean? Like it, to invest in those, to and me, it feels like it's more achieved.
To me, it feels more restrictive because I mean, like I don't mind it, but I prefer a system where you can both have 100 in one-handed, but one character will have more damage because they have higher strength. It's like, oh, not only am I as skilled as you can get, I'm also really strong compared to this other character. So it has kind of the same variety, if not more, in that sense, that every character with 100 in one-handed also has 100 in strength or agility and does the same damage.
Maybe not to the degree that it has to be 100-100, like one-to-one, but like a sort of some level of restriction.
Right.
Even if it was maybe like an expert level.
Okay,
like
so you can't have 20 in, I don't know, I'll use your example, agility, and then have 100 in one-handed. Like there's a base competency in the attribute. That kind of makes sense.
Yeah, like, but just basically because part of it, like, I also liked the idea that was kind of interesting in, is that a lot of perks in Cyberpunk, you, in terms of, like, build variety, upgraded with your attributes, really. It was about your attribute level and how that factored in. Like, look, Cyberpunk's system wasn't perfect or so on.
No.
But I think they could look at these things and implement, like, pull attributes back. Like, picking health, magic, or stamina, and that's it. Sucks, and then just skills and like perks. Like I think they could like reinvigorate the system quite a bit, and I think attributes would be an important part because regardless of even any like, you know, skill attribute connection system, the attributes still at their core serve a function that makes your character stand out. Like you could be like, if imagine if it almost works like special points in Fallout kind of thing. Like you just start and you have your orc, and your orc default will have like a number of things where they might, do you know what I mean? Like, and you can,
yeah, I'm just getting scared. I'm just thinking of like, remember when Fallout 4 came out and we said like, oh guys, there's no skills in Fallout 4, and everyone's like, yes there is, you're silly, why would they take out skills? Because remember we were analyzing the Pip-Boy in one of the trailers, and then I'm just thinking now Elder Scrolls, and they're like, no more skills, but it's like, I've got high strength attribute, I'm getting one-handed damage perks. That sounds terrible to me, but I do like the idea of using a system with both. Like, I'm all good for both, but or unless they just happen to have heaps of perks per attribute, but definitely wouldn't want the Fallout system.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, I just mean in not, I meant like Fallout system as in like New Vegas and stuff where you pick your specials, like not that that determines the perks necessarily for.
Oh yeah, and then you have skills in addition.
Yeah, you'd have skills and your attribute stuff and then perks in the skill trees and stuff like that. But then, like, you know, like, I you could even have extra... Like, I think I mentioned this to you before, but you could do a system, like, to add extra variety. Kind of like almost what ESO actually does, that they have, like, a race skill tree. And then there's perks and stuff you can get and in or perk tree.
Yeah.
And if you had a similar thing, like, if you had a similar thing for attributes. So you could have, like, you know, there's a race one and then there's, like, you know, your strength or whatever ones that sort of exist outside of the skills as well, which add more variety and, like, things that... Because do you know how sometimes, like, you want... like there's some things that don't really fit into a skill, like a perk that would be really cool, but doesn't really fit into a like one-handed or whatever. Like if it was able, like not that you can pick up objects like you could in Deus Ex or something, but the whole idea that, you know, if you get certain perks or whatever, that you could pick up heavier things.
Just pick up a horse, like it's a car. And just...
yeah. Or they could add it all back as skills, and they could be like, oh, here's your acrobatic skill, your athletic skill. And
you know what? I got to be honest. I'm all in favor of more perks, right? So if there's all your perks as normal in skills, and then there's also, like you said, like a kind of race perk tree, but then there's also attribute-based perks. I kind of like that if it's all separate. I just wouldn't want to water down what's already there. But if it was all separate, that could be really cool. Because as we were talking about before, you could have a system where it's like, okay, this is my character. There's two characters, both have 100 in one-handed, but only one of them has 100 in strength. So the payoff there is not just, oh, mine's more unique because he has more damage, because more strength. It's actually like, my one-handed character is more unique because he has a strength perk you can't get that allows him to do some, I don't know, big rushing charge or like, you know what I mean? Then you actually do start feeling different with the characters you're playing.
Well, yeah. It's actually a fairly small thing from Fallout, but I'd love to see traits come across because, you know, it doesn't seem like it's not as important as many of the other things, but I really enjoyed picking traits for a character because it really felt like you kind of, more than just giving them skills and abilities, it gave them a strong personality as well. You know, they were very much tied to like, you know, you could have someone who's quite unhinged or, you know, hallucinate, like the Wild Wasteland one being a good example of just kind of like, I don't know, you could kind of make a slightly mad character without it drastically impacting the gameplay.
Or someone who needs to wear glasses, you know, like to get the best benefit because, you know, like those kinds of things are cool for sure. Like,
there's actually something you don't see in Elder Scrolls, really. Glasses. Just feels weird. I just started imagining Elder Scrolls characters with glasses and I'm like, oh, that's weird.
I definitely think traits are good. Have you either of you played Bannerlord too much at all?
Not
anything at all. Basically, they have a really interesting system of character creation where you start and you basically just building a backstory. So it's like, oh, what were you like as a where were you, who were your parents? What was your childhood like? What was your teenager life like? What did you do here? So on. And all of these different things. So it might be like, oh, I was, you know, hunting in the wilds, or I like, you know, take something to market, or like I was training with the cavalry. And that will actually decide like your starting sort of attributes and so on. But I feel like a similar-ish kind of thing, just some sort of system of like, you don't have to play through the backstory or anything, but if there was an option, you could do it more broadly like the trait system, but having traits built upon that you can kind of like, so, you know, we could make up a backstory for a character, but then there's like these traits that would fit into it that are sort of general, you know what I mean? So if it was a trait that like, I was a merchant trait or something like that, merchant trait or something like that, but that trait then will, you know, it will work with your backstory and then actually have gameplay bonuses at the start.
I think that's pretty cool. Only thing I could see there going wrong is you do get restricted into like, here's a bunch of like backstory choices you have to select from. Whereas,
that's what I mean. I would say do it like the trait
system. So it is just traits, pick none. But it is the description underneath the trait, say. So merchant trait would say, you used to be a merchant, blah, 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 blah. And you get whatever bonuses come with it. Because you can do it in a way with traits where, kind of like you're saying, some in the description might talk about your backstory and that's why. Or it might just be, you know, you're unhinged, but not explain why.
Yeah, I mean, if you're picking a merchant trait, I feel like that says you were a merchant. I feel like then, you know.
Yeah,
like,
then you were.
You know,
you're exactly
a merchant, that it works
exactly
with it.
That's like, why I'm saying don't you don't need to pick. That's almost why I'm saying you don't need to pick, like, backstory paths for traits. Because it's implied.
Yeah, no, you don't, yeah. But still. Yeah, like, because, I mean, even early on, like, if you think back to, like, Mass Effect, I remember Mass Effect had, like, three different things, and it's what Cyberpunk was initially going to have, like, three different sort of things that just give your character a bit more that might not have to be, like, necessarily, like, defining things. Like, for example, like, you know, in Cyberpunk, the original 2018 demo and so on, had, like, childhood hero. Like, you could even if there's three options or five options, like, you know what I mean? Like, that's not necessarily restrictive. Like, you might have been like, oh, my childhood hero is Ricky Ponting or something like that. But, like, that doesn't reflect your now. But it would have had some sort of, you know, little bit of impact or something like that, or a fun little, like...
You can play cricket in a quest. Wow.
Yeah.
I mean, when we talked before about the idea of having the kind of alternate start way of starting it, it could somewhat be like Cyberpunk, where you can pick an alternate start while still having the iconic intro, because you just get to a very similar starting point from your origins, if that makes sense. Kind of like how in Cyberpunk, even though it was very poorly handled, I think in the end, you get to Jackie at some point, yeah, regardless. So meeting Jackie is your start point, but there are many different ways, like, even if it's quickly, to get there. But, you know, unfortunately, like, that could be hit or miss, because I didn't actually do it. But I think, like, with the corpo start, somehow you go from this kind of like mogul in a you know, working at the top of a skyscraper, to suddenly you're now like a street crime guy, and it, you know, so it can kind of feel forced.
Yeah.
So I guess it depends how it's handled.
The biggest thing with any of those decisions, they've just got to, like, not rob the player of agency or pigeonhole them into something. So it's like with the alternate start thing, like, that's, you know, when you're picking alternate start in Skyrim or something, that really just, that gives you more freedom, because it gives you more options of, oh, I'm a vampire in a lair here, or I'm a mercenary traveling from High Rock, or, you know, Morrowind or something like that. And that's actually a tool that will give you more freedom. I guess it's just, the point is that with that sort of start, that's designed to, like, go and, you know, explore the open world, but you've got to, like, link back with the main story, which is what they'll want to do. So I think they will start everyone with some cinematic.
Yeah. And even if they don't, though, like, you look at alternate start, it's vague. It's vague, yeah, on purpose.
Yeah.
Yeah. I definitely... I mean, you look at crossing the border with the Stormcloaks, it sounds quite specific, but you can kind of, like, mental gymnastic your way around that, because it's nowhere near as bad as Fallout, where it's like, this is who you were in your past life, and, like, you know, if you're a male, you're in the military, and so on.
I think people got to, like, they got to learn, like, what game they're making. Like, yeah, if you're playing, like, the big open world, be whoever you want, just go and do whatever you want, that's so much better when it's vague. Whereas whenever you start creating a sort of, like, if you can also, like, there are good RPGs out there that are, like, you know, like Knights of the Old Republic series, and even New Vegas to a degree, you have a courier backstory and you've sort of got a little bit more pushed in a direction, but you're, I don't know, that's, like, when I play New Vegas, I'm playing it for, like, the choices and the outcomes and the factions, like, it's different to the sort of, I'm just going to go in, you know, Skyrim and shoot some deer and train my Magicka up. It's a different feeling. It's the open world versus, even though New Vegas is an open world, but it's the way it sort of funnels you into the experience, rather than, it's different. You're not playing New Vegas to explore the desert. You know what I mean? Like, but in Skyrim, you're exploring, oh, what's behind that corner, or some loot here or whatever, and, like, you know, oh, maybe there's a cool quest here. It's a different sort of mentality behind it, I think. When both are good, you just got to learn which one you're going to do.
I think at the end of the day, a lot of, you know, regardless of what your start is, you can suspend some disbelief, but there's one thing that will always be the thing that kind of ruins your ability to play a character, and that will be a voice protagonist. So if we have voice protagonists, I really think no matter how they do it, it will really limit your ability to roleplay a character. Because you saw it with Fallout 4 to an extent, and especially with Cyberpunk. It was one of my gripes with Cyberpunk, is that if you play a male character, you pretty much have to be like some New York kid, with, you know, who you can't really play a very well-educated character. You can't play a kind of... I mean, you pretty much can't play anything but this New York kid. And in Fallout 4, it's slightly hard to be unhinged when you've got this really nice, posh voice, you know. So these things will limit you no matter what the start is.
Yeah.
So I wonder whether they'll do it, I guess, is a question.
Yeah, I mean...
I don't think they will, because there's too many races. Like, with all the different accents. Like, unless you're, like, you know what I mean? Like, you know, if you're doing a male and a female, you've got all of the potential. Because it's not just NPC lines. You're taking voiced lines, and you've got to make, you know, you have to make at least one for pretty much, you know, maybe you'd get away with, like, High Elf and Wood Elf being the same, or, like, Breton and Imperial having the same voice. But, you know, Khajiit's got a very distinct voice. Argonian's got a very distinct voice. Orcs do. And you have to do each gender for either. It's, like, literally voice acting, you know, 20... you know, potentially and it's 20 still worse.
That's the thing. Yeah. Like, they'd be looking at, this is what we have to do, and be thinking, is it even worth the payoff? Like, even if it was easy, is it worth it? Like, it's not easy, yeah, but even if it was, like, imagine you can't be an old person anymore. You know, these little things, like, because your voice sounds young. You can't imagine that, you know, your voice is really deep or light, or, you know, or that your vocal cords are torn because you've been screaming in a war for the last 10 years or...
And it works against the choice in the way that, like, if you want to give a player a bunch of different options, and some of them are like evil maniacal options, and one of them is like this, you know, like you're saying, like well-educated or whatever, a bunch of different options that are going to kind of like come from different characters who would sound different. Like, if you have no voice acting, you can just do that with writing new options with text. Whereas if you've got a voice, you've got to have the same voice actor sort of change in a way, and then you have that like weird jarring kind of thing that happens in some of the games like Fallout 4, and times where you like you say something and you sound like some, you know, Jersey or whatever, some Boston born kid kind of thing, but then the next line you say, because you choose the sarcastic option or the negative option, it sounds so out of place, because like a second ago you were like this like jovial sort of like, you know, Boston kid kind of thing, and then next you're I'm evil kind of thing. Like, that was what was jarring. And I understand what they tried to do with Nuka World. They tried to implement more choice and basically being able to be evil and so on. But it just almost feels jarring for your character, because you come out, you're like, oh, I've got to find Sean, my son. And you're going off doing all your stuff and all your options are limited. But then in this one area, you turn into this like evil mastermind kind of guy, you know what I mean?
But even if it was done right, which would have been a much better game experience, right? Like, if there were more choices even in Fallout 4 and how you can react to things, it would have been better. But even then, the fact that not every dialogue option has a choice, right? Like, there are some dialogue lines, unless they did that, but they wouldn't. So there are some dialogue lines where you just enter conversation and like you have to say this one line. So if it is that, like you're saying, this line where you enter and you say like, oh, these nice things, and then your choice options come up and then you press evil because you're an evil character. It's just, I don't know. It also kind of kills the nuance in a lot of situations to have like three buttons to press, and one's good, one's evil, one's this, one's that, you know, like there's no kind of like, oh, I'm not just black and white. I want to pick this one this time and this time, without it sounding funny and
it's like
weird.
You see those like funny skits and stuff and like animations and so on, where it's like you pick an option and then like you pick the like negative option, it's like, oh, I'm gonna do it, I'm gonna kill you, and it's like this super like over violent reaction, like you didn't want to pick, but you've only got two options, like blue or red, and if you pick the red one, it's like, you know, deadly. And like,
I had that happen to me once in Witcher, in my first playthrough with Kira Metz. I can't say the dialogue option I picked because we'll get demonetized, but yeah, it didn't end up well. And I did not think it would be bad at all. And it was like the worst thing.
Yeah, I think overall voice protagonists only work if you are having a character who is fixed, like Geralt or Adam Jensen or something like that. So it's kind of like the direction you're taking their story. Because when you play a game like that, you're not trying to invent a new character. You're just kind of got your decision spin on the character that you're playing. So it's different. Whereas when you're playing a game like, you know, Elder Scrolls, like the big sell is that you can be whoever you want in this other world, you know, and go off and do things. So if they limit to who you can be, it's not good. It's not good at all.
But let's, as we'll say, because we're all on webcams here, it feels like I'm on some corporate Zoom meeting. Let's circle back to Elder Scrolls 6.
Yeah, well, how about this for Elder Scrolls 6 settlement building? Do you know what? I can guarantee they're going to have, especially with like a High Rock type setting, but like a more robust sort of house building kind of system. Do you know what changed my mind on this? The biggest problem with settlement building in Fallout 4 is that they built the whole like quest line around it, and they sort of removed a lot of towns and potential towns and stuff that could have been unique. But if it is truly an addition, like I downloaded this mod, I forgot it was some like big manor mod thing that was in like a Falkreath forest area in Skyrim. But if you actually go in a playthrough and you start off and you've built, like, you know, you got your little house and you build it up and you hire new people and village and you sort of like build this little bit of feudal land, it's actually a really fun experience if it's not like, oh, we're just going to replace Falkreath with this, you know, different city. You know what I mean? It's basically just the opportunity cost. But in addition, it does actually enhance role-playing in a way, in the way that if you want to become like, you know, a minor lord kind of thing and have your own manor and like so on, it does actually fulfill that.
And even if the options were like, you know, there's one spot in each kingdom of Hyrok where you can kind of establish your own kingdom, or like, you know, or a lordship or something, and you kind of serve the king of that region, that wouldn't be like Fallout, where it very much felt like settlement building was an excuse to not build up these towns, because you build up all the towns. But if there's just one spot, you know, you can kind of pick your faction essentially and become a bit of a lord in that area, then it doesn't really take away from the other environments you'll come across.
I feel like that's a really good way to do it as well, just because it could work in well with the story. Like, people often like, oh, I want to be king or whatever, and sometimes for like sort of world story reasons, it doesn't always work out the best that that's the case, because when you're a king, you have like ridiculous responsibilities and all these other things. It doesn't make sense that you're off just like, you know, killing goblins in a mine. But if you are, if you can kind of get to the state where you are a minor lord, so like, just imagine literally the Skyrim scenario, but when you become Thane, that you actually get granted a parcel of land or whatever, and then you can build on it and do whatever you like for it. And it would actually, it would be a cool sort of consequence kind of thing if you could only, like, you know, in a game, if they, you could only become like a Thane of one place, or like really like pledge allegiance to sort of like one of the groups, do you know what I mean, instead of being able to be like, I'm a Thane of everywhere and so on, like, you know what I mean?
Like, you're pretty much the most influential person in Skyrim at that point, just Thane of everything, dragonborn, like high, like super high leader in one of the civil war factions, like head of all factions in general. It does get a bit like that. And I mean, I guess what you're proposing anyway is kind of like what Hearthfire was, just expanded to more areas with more limited choice in where you can build, like, which area you get to have your residence in. And I guess with Hyrok specifically, it does play well into their whole, what is it, find a hill and become a king thing.
Yeah.
The whole vibe of
becoming
powerful and acquiring a good life for yourself if you have the ambition to do so. It's very Breton.
But it's got to be like a sort of like an optional thing too. Like, it will really suck if it is this. Like, even if you default, if you're going to become like, you'll get a lord title at some point throughout the main or whatever with something like that, you kind of want it to be like, you can just, oh, cool, I've got a little bit of land, do nothing with it. Like, don't integrate it into the story. Because if I'm playing an assassin, like if I'm playing some Dark Brotherhood culty assassin, like, I might just want to buy a small house in like some quiet area or something. I don't want to build a grand castle. Don't shove me into making some grand castle, you know what I mean, or being a lord of land.
Like, yeah, or like, you're disadvantaged if you don't. It's kind of just like,
do you know what, you should be able to reject it. That's such a simple choice. But imagine if the Jarl is like, oh, I make you name you Thane of Whiterun, and then you can actually go like, no, I actually reject it, I don't want this thing. And that would be, it's such a simple choice, but it would increase your role playing.
Yeah, it definitely.
Well, that's kind of like what I was going to suggest, because, you know, if you become the Thane of every city in Skyrim, it's not the biggest deal. But in Hyrok, where you imagine there's a lot of politics between the kingdoms and they're all vying against one another, that if you want to raise your standing in one faction, being able to deny another one while not being locked out of their quests would be a good way to go. Whereas if you already have, you know, like a barony or something in Daggerfall, and then you're working for the King of Wayrest, he's like, pretty sure you've got a pretty good relationship with their king, I don't really trust you. That would be a good way to get into the Hyrok politics.
Yeah, absolutely. And like, even like, you could always have the option too, like, some people might see this as restrictive, but there's, you've kind of got a balance of like, what's restrictive or what's choice and consequence, you know. So it's like, if you do, maybe you can actually switch, like, but to the King of Wayrest and become Baron of there, but it's going to cost you the barony of the other place. Like, you can only have one at a time, you know what I mean? Like, it's an actual choice of allegiance.
Imagine if the house you kind of built there is still standing, but some other NPC Thane owns it, and like, if you go there, it is hostile territory, and you're kind of like, but I built this, that's my alchemy room I wanted there. But it would be
cool.
And
it's just another example of like, you know, for a second, third, fourth playthrough, it's like, oh, I chose that barony this time, I'm going to choose a different one this time, rather than, oh, I was Thane of every every hold, I don't really need to be Thane of this hold next time.
It's the kind of thing in like Morrowind too, where it kind of makes your love for a faction grow more. So when you're like, you have your like estate stronghold kind of thing, if you're like Hlalu or Redoran, or you're literally making a Telvanni tower if you're a Telvanni wizard, like it kind of really makes you feel like you're part of the faction, because you're like and it's also, it gives you something to work towards as well. Like, you know what I mean, that because a lot of the time you know in Skyrim you'll just end up with thousands of dollars and not do anything with it. Like, there's nothing you need to buy.
I will say on that topic, I really hope in Elder Scrolls 6 we have more joinable factions like Morrowind, where they kind of, any class could, like, well, there were multiple factions for the same class, but they had differing ideologies or philosophies. So like, if you're a mage, you don't have to join the College of Winterhold. You can join this other magic guild that's very different philosophically, and perhaps they're even enemies. So if you join one, you can't join the other.
Yeah.
You know, and that also encourages replayability.
Because that's the other thing. I think the choice is like, the consequence is what kind of makes it an actual meaningful choice, because it doesn't really feel like as much of a choice if you can join every single guild. Like, if you imagine in Skyrim, if you joined, just for sake of example, not this isn't the ideal one, but if you could join the Thieves Guild, but then can't join the Dark Brotherhood because they don't like the Dark Brotherhood. Joining the Thieves Guild now feels 10 times more meaningful because of what you're giving up to join them. So, like, the actual consequence or negative aspects of joining certain things, in the same way, it's like, you know, we were talking about before with races. If you pick a race, you choosing to get the benefits of Orc will give you these drawbacks, but those benefits, kind of like that choice, like it feels better knowing what you lost, you missed out on being some super magical high elf or something like that. Like, it's actually the thing that you're missing out on which makes it seem more meaningful, because it's an opportunity cost, you know?
And I mean, Todd said, we want this game to be played for a decade, which, to be honest, even if they didn't want that, that would be the case, because it's going to be another decade before the next one. But, but you know, if you want that, then this is exactly what you should encourage. Don't have everyone achieve everything in one playthrough.
Yeah.
If you want it to last for 10 years, that's the way to do it.
Yeah, you know? Absolutely. And it's like, for the, I guess the aspects of people who, like, I mean, look, I don't relate to anyone who does one playthrough of Skyrim. And I don't think anyone listening to this podcast really relates either to just wanting to do one playthrough. Like, they get off on like being all these different characters and builds and, oh, this playthrough and I'll do that. And like, do you know what I mean? Like, and exploration, instead of having this sort of, it's not like a, you know, a Ubisoft game where you're going to check off every area of the map. Like, you might, for it, it's a fun experience when you play a character, but then because this build's different, you're doing different things, and then you actually discover this whole new area that you wouldn't have otherwise really thought to have engaged with. Or so, it's like a classic sort of example, I guess, would be like an assassin, like finding a little different path because you're trying to sneak around. Whereas if you never try to sneak, you might miss out like on a bunch of different, you know, alleyways and stuff. But like, it's kind of the world, I don't feel like it has to be a situation where you can make some god character that's everything. Like, I like overpowered characters too. Like, it's fun to try and make a bit. I actually like it when it's a challenging I'm like, it really kind of annoyed me in the Outer Worlds, where it's like, I basically made a god character straight away, and my incentive to replay outside of, it did have some other fun playstyles and so on, but it's too easy. Like, you actually want it to be a challenge to become it, because then it feels like you've earned it to become a god character, you know what I mean? If it's possible, like, you don't actually want it to be even be possible, but hyper powerful, you know what I mean? But they've still got to be missing on, maybe they're just missing that 10%. They can't be like, you know what I mean? Like, I just think it's choice and consequence is super powerful. And like in Skyrim, like, a lot of people criticize like the elders, like Skyrim and Oblivion, for not having much choice and consequence, because they go, oh, not an RPG or whatever, which is just not true. It's different. The way it works is the choice, like, obviously they should have both, like, choice within the guild storylines, like, you have actual like agency, but it's about the choice is sort of who you want to be and where you want to go. Like, you can go and be just an assassin and just do the Dark Brotherhood storyline, or you can just go and worship the Daedra and be a Daedra worshipper and do all the Daedra quests or something like that. You're not actually, whereas things that are more linear have to provide you a choice on the path, like which one. Optimally, you want both, but
it is ironic that Cyberpunk has less choice than Skyrim, in the sense that Skyrim's not even designed, in the way that Skyrim's not designed to have choice. like those areas, like the faction, like actual choices where it's like this or that, not just who you want to be. And then Skyrim still has more, like, will you spare Cicero? Like, by no means is Skyrim a game that's, like, you know, respected highly in that department of choice at all. But there's still more. Which side of the Civil War are you on? Like, there's heaps of little things.
Yeah, but it's like if your goal is you just want to go and buy and sell things and loot dungeons until you have enough money to have your mana and set up your alchemical thing, like, you can do that. Like, you know, you can choose all of these different...
Yeah, that...
It's choice of path versus choice on the path.
And that's what Skyrim is, you know, better with. And I guess you could say it's sorry, I'm just having a mind blank. Shit.
Well, it's a different... approach of the game. It's like understanding, I guess, like, you... what your game is going to be at first. Like, if you're trying to tell, like, a very impactful story... Like, look, let's be frank. Like, Elder Scrolls... Like, Skyrim doesn't have these ridiculously, you know, amazing narratives that are all complex and so on and so on. But that's not what the game's setting out to do. It's just setting you... You're setting out to be whoever you want. Whereas if you want to have a sort of narrative, more narrative-driven thing, you kind of need to, like, put the player on the path a bit more. And, you know what I mean? Like, then also the... choices and consequences in the path become more important, because you're not really, I guess, like, New Vegas is an actual example of a proper, like, more hybrid sort of one, because you're not, at least I'm not really playing New Vegas to, like, be whoever I want. You're kind of making faction decisions. Like, you are whoever you want on a level, but you're kind of engaging with the story in the world, whereas in the Elder Scrolls you can kind of not, you can just choose to not engage with the world, because, well, engage with the factions, but then you're still engaging with all of the open world stuff that there is, all the dungeons to explore, all of the things to find in nooks and crannies, or just, you know, or the city life. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's got a different... There is a different purpose behind the game, I feel like. Originally, it's... Yeah.
Well, yeah, there's, like, there's kind of a sense of urgency, I guess, that, you know, it depends... It's kind of... It's very good to have your choices. While this can be seen as a negative, have your choices have serious physical... impacts. And that's with New Vegas. It's that if you side with this faction, they will be the preeminent faction at the end of the day, and it can see other factions completely get wiped out. Whereas, you know, as we've kind of alluded to with Skyrim, you can choose at any point really to engage with any of the groups and see their quest lines through, and they'll never, like, really overlap. And I mean, that would be another good thing about, you know, if you pick to go with the Thieves Guild, you can completely see the Dark Brotherhood get destroyed, whereas otherwise they may have been, you know, risen back into prosperity.
And to clarify on that point, like, when this is what we've suggested in like the Ideal Elder Scrolls 6 video from, like, years ago and all kinds of things, is that, like, obviously I don't actually want that degree. It would be best if you had something like simple as Thieves Guild storyline, you start it, and then you could have, like, you could either have a system where you could go with Mercer and, like, become, like, a greedy sort of one, or you can become, like, a bit more, like, yeah, pro Nocturnal Nightingale with Brynjolf and Carlyle. You can take it in one or two directions, or alternatively, you can have it where a bit more like Morrowind, where you had two guilds for the same-ish thing. So you have the Tel'vanni and the Mages Guild, and they're kind of like, they're different choices of a similar function, or Redoran and Fighters Guild, or... It's not an exact comparison of Flalo and Thieves Guild, but you know what I mean.
You know, you can have both if you think about it. You can have the option of if it's Mages Guild and Tel'vanni, and then you still get to shape the Mages Guild in their own way.
Yeah.
I mean, or you can have, like, what Skyrim should have been with the Companions, where you actually get to join the Silverhand and be anti-werewolf instead of, you know, join the Circle after one main mission for the faction.
Absolutely. Like, I want to make it clear, we're not, like, defending Skyrim's, like, saying it's, like, it's the grandmaster of choice. A lot of your choice happens on your end of, like, oh, I'm going to play this kind of character that does these quests or so on. It's, like, choice of part. Like, obviously, we want Elder Scrolls 6 to have more choice like that.
Way
even
more.
If it is just you play through a guild, and then there's sort of, like, even a binary option of where you're going to help this one or this one, and that will shape the outcome of that guild.
Well, I think a lot of these problems, they tend to be compromises from a game development standpoint. You know, like, they probably, you know, in an ideal world, if you spoke to all of the devs, they'd be like, yeah, we want the Silver Hand to be playable so you can pick between the two, da-da-da. But, you know, maybe with Elder Scrolls 6, given the amount of time there's been to work on it, a lot of this stuff will be there, which, you know, fingers crossed. But yeah, I mean, like, you know, on that topic as well, it's one of those things I was thinking about when it came to scale, because I used to, one of my bigger problems with Skyrim is walking into Whiterun and realizing that, oh, there's about 15 buildings in this whole giant city.
Yeah.
But then at the same time, it's like you kind of have to measure your expectations in that Cyberpunk, you know, I don't want to just rag on Cyberpunk, but it's an example of a really expansive world where it was just as shallow as, you know, as shallow as a puddle, whereas Skyrim's much smaller, but everything had depth. You know, there were nameless NPCs, but in almost all cases, anyone you ran into, there was something interesting about them, something to learn, something to do. So I guess you kind of need to find that middle ground.
Well, like, I don't even mind, like, I have a feeling that, like, I never got the feeling that, like, Novigrad and Witcher was, like, a poor city. Like, I thought it was cool because there were still areas of interaction. So, like, even in the Cyberpunk example, if there were lots of hubs where it's like, okay, there's a bunch of hubs all around the city of these characters you can, you know, so say you go to this, like, you know, there's the Tiger Claws headquarters club and you can go in there and there's, like, a bunch of characters you can interact with. Even though when you come out of that there's just going to be a lot of random NPCs, there's still, you've got that... The problem with Cyberpunk was that all of the characters that are worthwhile interacting are only on the mainline sort of story, or like sort of a few of the side story quests. But like outside of that, there's no one to interact with. There's not even like in a meaningful way, kind of, like, you know what I mean? It kind of, I guess, builds the world. So you'll never meet really any of the heads of the different gangs or factions or people or so on. And like the whole phone call system worked poorly, I think, you know, like, because A, it was annoying as hell getting rung up all the time, but you never, like, some of the characters had potential, but you never really meet them in person until like the very end, or like if you went in there and saw the environment they're in, you're vibing with who that person is, you understand what they're about, like, from what you're seeing. It's like the classic thing, it's like gaming is also a visual medium too, like show don't tell, like having a guy come up on the phone and go blah 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 blah, I'm this person, I'm your handler for here, I'll do this, it doesn't feel as good, you don't understand it as much as when you first walk into the Thieves Guild and there's all of the different characters around at the bar and one of them's British for whatever reason, the Delvin guy, and then there's Brynjolf talking to another character and it's creating an environment. They had that in parts of the main story, like in the afterlife and so on, but that's why they're the highlights, but the rest of it, it doesn't sort of, you know...
It's kind of like the opposite of why NPCs are memorable in Oblivion. You know, with the face zoom in and you just like get really in their face, it's just take that and like make their face really small on the screen and you never really meet them. And that's why, you know, you got to meet these characters. You got to see the expression on their face and actually have... Because that's the other thing. If you think about phone call system, and we won't dwell on this for too long because it's not exactly Elder Scrolls 6 related. We're not going to have magical telepathy phone calls and that become a problem. But there's not even as much dialogue to pick. Like when you're in person, you kind of sit there and you're like, I'm going to say this out of like four choices. But if someone rings you and says, oh, we need you to handle this problem, you're not going to be like... tell me about your establishment. Like, you're just not, because you're there to do a job. They called you to give you a task. And that's it.
It's one of the really important things about the day-night cycle of the characters. So, you know, a recent video you made, Michael, where you kind of, like, explored how tragic Windhelm is as a city. It's, you know, it's not a giant city, but all of these characters, they have their quest lines to explore, but you don't necessarily find them in the exact same spot every time waiting for you to interact with them, kind of like how the phone call would work. You know, you could come across them in the market. They could be at work. They could be at home. All of these things, like just every character. It feels like if you weren't there, you're imagining the city. You're imagining them getting on with their lives. Whereas, you know, not just Cyberpunk, in a lot of games, they literally only exist... in your peripherals, you know, only if you're looking at them.
It's so crazy in Cyberpunk that they literally don't exist if you turn around. Like, that's like, such a next level.
Yeah, the police were very like that. They just spawn everywhere.
Yeah.
But
so if they can upscale that, you know, keep their way of doing things, but make it larger. Yeah, like as you said with The Witcher, you could have, you know, nameless NPCs just wandering around to fill it out, but still have your big cast of characters that just get on with their lives on an upper scale, on a higher scale.
The other thing too is, like, really, they kind of do have NPCs like that in Skyrim anyway, where you'll, but they become memorable because they've only got to utter a line or two. But, like, you know, Nazim, and where do you get the cloud district, you do not interact with him at all in terms of, like, dialogue, and all he does is just wander around and utter those lines. That's it. You create character, it creates atmosphere. It's like, oh, do you get to the cloud district? And even though, you know, the cloud district wasn't exactly well executed because it's small, like Skyrim would be in the too small bucket, but if you expanded it, you kind of, like, you know, you could kind of, like, double or triple, like, probably triple the NPCs and so on, and then add a bunch of, like, you know, you just got to give them a randomly generated, like, you know, Redguard kind of sounding name and maybe a line or something. Maybe they utter it about, like, oh, my work at the fishery is killing me or something like that. But it does.
Yeah. They use that a lot in Skyrim. And I'll take it one step further. You don't even need to give them names. Like, if you do want to have those generic NPCs, you take it beyond what Cyberpunk did. Just give them a role. You look at them. It says farmer. Like, they had, like, farmer. And you talk to them, and maybe they're just walking on the road and they just say something like, you know, my crops, like, died this year. It was such a harsh winter and I'm going here to do this. And you may not ever see them where they say they're going, but it is just a way of adding a character into the world that isn't really a character that you have anything to do with, but it still expands the world building. They don't just walk past you on the road with no name. Even if the name is just what their role is, right?
Yeah.
Like, I'm a farmer, I'm a courier, I'm a merchant, this and that. You need that.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think, you know, the good thing is they've got all of this Microsoft money behind them now. So hopefully there's a lot of, like, stuff that they can actually do. Like, we won't be living on a system where you can, like, you got to go through a loading screen. And, like, it's kind of crazy, like, how hot your computer and overburnt the computer gets on playing Skyrim super modded up by comparison to playing modern optimized games that are way more graphically impressive, but it runs just fine because it's, you know, it's all good. It's built to run. You know?
Yeah.
But, yeah, I mean, this is, you know, I guess a big question, but I feel that we might all be in agreement for it. But in terms of the story for Elder Scrolls 6, who do you think is going to be the big bad? Do you think it'll be the Falmor?
I think they're running with a Thalmor kind of thing. Like, I think if they really... Because I heard somewhere... I heard this, so I don't know how true it is, but, like, it's the last mainline Elder Scrolls thing or something like that. And they want to make it last for 10 years, becoming a franchise. I don't know. I kind of don't want another metaphysical just, like... Oh, like, you know, shoehorning Alduin in, like, oh, let's put in, like, Satakal, some other world-ending thing. Like, I prefer, like, the Thalmor. I would rather some more human enemies. Like, for example, like, the real enemy in Oblivion is Menkar Cameron. Like, that's who you're really fighting. Because he's the voice for the big evil god or whatever, but there's a person behind it, there's a prophet, there's a sort of... He's, like, the tangible sort of enemy that you kind of... I remember to about more and I relate to. And it was, like... There was, like, a good parts of the story when you're sort of building up and uncovering his plot and so on. And he's got all this cool exposition and stuff. Like, evil monologue stuff. It's the same way that, like, you know, a Manamarco kind of thing. Or some kind of powerful, but still human. But when you get to the sort of Alduin kind of thing, they become kind of, like, disembodied. They're way more, like, evil force. God, like, they feel like less of a person, you know what I mean?
Well, they are, like, they're not a character. Person,
they are, but even what I'm saying is, like, even though they can speak and so on, they're just less characterized because they're just force embodiments. Like, that's
this
what
is what I'm saying, they're not a person, like, yeah, that's the thing. Whereas if you have a person behind the dark force, then that's fine because it kind of adds some character to it, like with Menkar Cameron. I mean, for Elder Scrolls 6, I really could see the towers, like, kind of idea that we've been going with in some of our videos go through really well, because then you can have exactly what you're describing. The kind of scary element is, you know, they're trying to undo the world, but at the end of the day, there's a human person, or perhaps even just a party, you know, kind of like five really elite secret Thalmor dudes at the top doing their thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, because if this centers around the Iliac Bay, I'm, like, fairly certain it'll involve the Dureni. And, you know, we've got information about the Adamantine Tower, obviously. It's, like, the first tower of creation and the zero stone. And I know, like, initially it felt like you had to subscribe to the undoing the towers theory for this to be the main story. But even in ESO, they've added some kind of interesting stuff regarding the tower and the Zero Stone. Like, there's a little thing I found here that was from a text in ESO that says, "We cannot solve the mystery of the Zero Stone and use it to open the Argent aperture which it wards. At maturity, every Dereni of High Blood is brought into the tower, conducted to the foundation vault, and shown the Zero Stone. We are allowed to touch it once, so as to feel the transcendent mystical power that courses through it, a power we have never been able to tap. And we are shown the Argent aperture in the adjacent metallic wall, that door with its lock of 13 slowly counter-rotating rings, a portal we've never been able to open." And it's like, as if we're not going to be, like, opening that portal in The Elder Scrolls 6. That's what I think is going to be the case.
No, and you got to think of the innovation too. Like, they're probably going to add in boat travel and stuff, so you can imagine the whole Iliac Bay being a good... And I mean, to be honest, like, they have the resources. Like, sometimes with the Ubisoft, like, Assassin's Creed games, I get kind of surprised at how big they are and, like, how much stuff. And but not just it's not just endless grass. Like, they are pretty... like, fresh and unique, like, each place, like, this, you know, like, what you'd expect in a Elder Scrolls, like, each region sort of is being distinct. So I can kind of imagine opening a map and then having, like, you know, Hammerfell and then the Iliac Bay and then High Rock at the top, and it is literally all of
you
that.
You could, especially when you hear the quotes from Todd Howard where he was saying things like, oh, how ambitious he wants it to be, and, like, you got to think, like, what games am I going to make before I die, and, like... You know, these
not attitude. Being possible on old technology as well. You know, like, you can imagine big open seas, kind of Strossmakai pirates getting involved, things like this. Yeah, there's a lot of potential. There's just so much potential to have really diverse regions and biomes without it kind of, like, somewhat weirdly meshing the way it had to in Skyrim. You know, if they can get the grand scale that it sounds like they're going for.
Yeah. But I think the good thing about the Towers story, if they do go with that whole being the plot, it points towards not being some Sword Singer Born kind of thing, you know what I mean? Like, because the premise of Skyrim was there's dragons, and then, like, oh, how do we get people to fight all the dragons? Oh, you're dragonborn, you've got to kill all the dragons. Like, that was a big cornerstone of, like, the premise, you know what I mean? Whereas if this is the premise, it's like, well, there's this big evil elven organization and the higher echelons want to unmake the world kind of thing. It facilitates a bit more of a you could be a normal person storyline.
Do you think we'll see dragons?
I reckon they might put in some, like, Easter egg enemies kind of things, like just a few, but not...
Maybe, like, Nephala Largus comes back or something like that, the dragon from Strossmakai, the Imperial one.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, he was killed by Cyrus, but that doesn't actually, you know, with a dragon, it doesn't really mean much.
Yeah.
You just slay it.
I could definitely see there being a few... You know, like how in Blackreach there's a dragon. Like,
it's like people love dragons too much for them not to include. Like, you know, because especially when some people are like, oh, you're looking forward to Skyrim 2? For a lot of people, it's just...
Yeah, look, you know, you can count on Bethesda doing that. You can count on it. Even if Elder Scrolls 6 is the best game ever, you can count on them putting in things that don't necessarily have to be there or shouldn't be there just for the sake of, you know, pleasing the fans. The same way the Brotherhood of Steel is in Fallout 76... It doesn't mean that it's going to ruin the game or overtake the whole thing. It's not going to be, you're the Dragonborn again, kill all the dragons. But yeah, I can almost... or will it?
Yeah, for sure.
But, you know, yeah, you can imagine there'll be a few.
My only problem with that in the whole brand thing is it just stops innovation, where it's like the kind of thing I will be disappointed if there is only the Dark Brotherhood, and that's it. If they're like, oh, the Dark Brotherhood's here, back again... That's it. Like, there's
but
never.
But I'd say
be...
that's highly plausible that they do that. I agree with you that it's not the right choice, but, like, don't think that that won't happen. It easily.
But then again, like, as much as there's that, they did innovate with the College of Winterhold and Companions. Now, they weren't the best guild factions, but they were unique. They weren't Fighters Guild. They weren't Mages Guild, and they did also, like, you know, expand the lore surrounding it and like. That's all I hope they do is just actually expand the lore of Hammerfell and High Rock and, like, you know what I mean? Like, find your Morag Tong equivalents or whatever. Like, have, you know...
You could have both.
I mean, we did it in
you could have
Ideal
both.
Elders. Yeah, you can, but you're just adding more to them. And if you give them a choice of, oh, you have both, they're going to pick the familiar one. So that's how you end up with the Brotherhood of Steel and Fallout 76 and all this kind of stuff. And it's just kind of like, just instead, people are going to buy your game, period. They're not, Dark Brotherhood is not the make or break it. They're buying it because it's a Bethesda Elder Scrolls big open world fantasy adventure. If you put in a unique Assassin's Guild or like something fresh or new, like people won't go like, nah, not getting it.
Yeah, of course, you know? But they still like doing it. Just don't be surprised.
I'm just saying, if it was up to me, if they came to me, it's like, look, I would rather them build the other one first. If they want to add the Dark Brotherhood in addition, like that's cool, because then it's like, you know, more better. But like, if they have to cut one, like do the new one, put in the new one.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah,
definitely. Same for a lot of the guilds. Like when they don't make sense being there, like the Dark Brotherhood wouldn't really if it was set right after Skyrim.
I mean, a lot of the other thing to bring up and talk about it is a lot of the other, we've been talking, like a lot of the things we like and want in the game are for role-playing reasons, because we're really into the role-playing side of things, obviously, in the lore and so on. One, in terms of role-playing, one thing that they've got to add, it's not just like factions and stuff either. Some of it needs to be in like what you can do and who can be. So sort of like, for example, just being able to be like a spearman versus axe, like, you know, weapon variety and, you know, transport variety. Like if you do have the Iliac Bay and you do have a boat and everything and you can be like some like sailboat kind of guy, now you can play a pirate character really authentically. You're not just an ex-pirate who's now landlocked on Skyrim. You can actually be a pirate, and that adds a whole new role-playing dynamic. And then you know what I mean?
Yeah, I do. Although I will say, I feel like it definitely in that scenario, you could see a case where everyone just becomes a pirate because it's like, oh, there's these landmasses out here with loot. What am I not going to go there because it's not a pirate character?
No, not the landmasses, but that's just travel. I mean, like actually acting out and like attacking enemy, attacking ships.
Oh, it just sounds fun. I just feel like everyone would do it.
Well, you know, there's the other side to it where it's like, you know, obviously I see what you're getting at, Michael. You wouldn't want to miss out on sailing.
Yeah, no way.
Just because you don't want to be a pirate. But if you know, if there is a focus on some of the High Rock factions, you could be more like the kind of naval, this is your kingdom's navy versus the pirate menace or whatever coming, and you can kind of perhaps be involved on either side of that.
And look, you won't miss out. I would say it's like if you're playing a dark evil character, like you might go, I'm not going to do the companions. Well, you're missing out on the companions, but and being a werewolf and all that, it's just the opportunity cost. You play the game again. I'm going to do a pirate playthrough. I'm going to do this one over, like, you know what I mean?
Oh, I agree with the premise. I just feel like it's more like as much as different characters explore different areas, I feel like a lot of people do explore the entire map with their first character.
No, yeah, but
I mean,
what I'm
saying
is the pirating thing. Like, it could even be tied to a guild or something, or like some sort of pirate clan.
That would be cool.
But it's like, what I'm just trying to say is that there's gameplay functionality to live out certain roles. Like, expanding that is quite important. More so even than just factions. It's just what you can on an individual level do, you know.
Yeah, even plus just like getting from Daggerfall to Sentinel, if both of those cities are in the game, you know, rather than going around, you know, you'd sail across even if you're not playing a pirate character and things like that. There'd be plenty of reasons to get out there.
But yeah, you know, have some mounts. But there's a lot of small things, like, you know, it's a lot of details, but the whole idea that you can put on horse armor does allow you now to be like this knightly, you know, horse-oriented character. It'd be cool. And especially considering, like, I'm sure they will have, you know, AI on horses and running around, you know, attacking you on horses. Like, that would be mad.
It's crazy really to think... Awesome. Sorry, it's a bit unrelated, but it's crazy to think just how far cosmetics in games have come. Like, the fact that was a huge meme. How much were they selling horse armor for? Like $5 or something? It was something like...
Something like that.
Yeah, it was like 5 Australian, so like 3 or 4 American.
Whatever the case, but look at games now. Like $20 for this skin, $20 for that skin in heaps of games. I mean, I don't actually buy them, but you can see how, like, by comparison, it's actually so small.
Bethesda, in a lot of ways, pioneered the whole DLC kind of thing. Like, the only thing I can only really get behind DLC when it is like an expansion of where, okay, we've done the main experience, now we're going to do this extra thing. So like in an Oblivion instance, it's like the Shivering Isles, or like, you know, people missed that they didn't have the sort of craziness of Morrowind and stuff like that. Let's do this, you know, DLC that gives them a whole new experience, but it's very like, this obviously didn't wasn't designed to be in the main game. But a lot of DLC just gets, these days, is just stuff that just should have been in the main game, or like adding in weapons and stuff. It's like they're examples. It's different if it's, oh, weapon from the Shivering Isles, because that's building out this world, versus if they give you a Shivering Isles weapon pack. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, that's the thing with the Creation Club. Like with Skyrim, obviously the Creation Club didn't go down brilliantly well, but you can live with it because the game came out a long time ago. It was complete. All, everything added as a result of the Creation Club. It gave you something new, but you didn't feel like anything was taken off you and then sold back to you. Whereas if the Creation Club is implemented immediately with Elder Scrolls 6, there's no way that anything sold on that Creation Club wouldn't have been better if you found it in a dungeon. There's just no way. So I wonder how they're going to...
I agree.
I have an OG memory, and like, yeah, if you're back in the day, if you played Skyrim when it came out, you'll remember some things, but there were no ranged kill cams straight away. There was no mounted combat at all. Like, there was a few things that they were actually adding in free updates and stuff, like in updates, like just sort of, you know, fixing up the game, which is cool. But like,
I found the horse armor. It was $2.50, and there was outcry.
Well, yeah. I think the thing is, I actually think they will be very good with it, because that, you know, Fallout 76, more so ESO, but they're their ways of making money that way. Mm. Whereas I think Elder Scrolls 6 will be purely about getting their reputation back up to the heights it once was. Mm. You know, they don't need to highly monetize the Elder Scrolls 6 when you've got highly monetized ESO that's just a constant source of cosmetic sales.
I feel like that's really good if that's true, but I feel like the last thing a corporation does is like, we've got enough things monetized.
I mean, but they did. Yeah. They also did just get bought by like
Microsoft.
Yeah. And stuff, like,
hey, I just
like,
want them to make a sick game. I just want a really good game.
Especially looking after what's happened to CD Projekt and Cyberpunk and so on. Like, yeah, I feel like they'll really want to, like, they need in these modern day to have that like good guy sort of thing.
And
like,
they've got Starfield first, so that may give us some clues as to where they're going and how, you know, how things are coming along. I don't have the highest expectations for Starfield, so I hope I'm pleasantly surprised. It just feels very like, you know, Buzz Aldrin in space and there's like no aliens or anything. Like,
I don't know if this is saying anything, but throughout this conversation I've completely forgotten about Starfield altogether.
Yeah.
You know, I just like, it's not the most, you know, obviously they haven't shown us much, but it's not quite so memorable yet.
No. I hope it is some turnaround, like you look at it and then it's like you think it's going to be some like, you know, boring kind of space kind of exploration thing, but then it turns out to be some like full Mass Effect or Warhammer 40k kind of vibe, like level of like basically put some fantastical elements in there, because I don't know, man, space is kind of boring. It's everything's white. It's just this plain like white painted ships, white painted astronaut costumes. Yay, I've got a jetpack. Woo!
Yeah.
Like, it's not, I don't know. It's not inspiring, and I feel like it's misplaced creativity. They've got to put some of that into, like, you know.
You can't just be roaming an asteroid like digging up, you know, space ore.
Yeah. Like, have you seen some of those kind of like Frank Frazetta art pieces where it's like, you know, these kind of like almost like knights in space and there's like colorful moons and all of that, you know, you want it to be like full of life and color.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that like would all be that ideal. Retro sort of 70s sci-fi fantasy kind of things, like John Carter on Mars type of stuff, like all of that, like just the more creative. It's basically fantasy in space, but that's why I would prefer Star Wars over Star Trek, because it's fantasy in space as opposed to just like, we've got to get to the Exmoor system to fix their, I don't know, echo chambers or whatever the hell. Like, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, Star Trek's definitely still kind of fantasy in space, just way less.
With aliens, yeah, but it's just, it's kind of like the,
it's a bit more clinical.
Oh, yeah.
It's clean. Yeah. You know, you don't want your, I don't like sci-fi to be too clean. It's what puts me off.
Yeah.
I don't want to, it's like a dentistry. That's how it kind of feels like. It's like, just, yeah.
Yeah.
Star Trek people now are seething. They're furious. But yeah. I think that's a pretty sturdy Elder Scrolls 6 discussion, because I can guarantee, guys, like, let us know what you guys think or thoughts and stuff down below, or any future Elder Scrolls 6 discussions you want to hear about, because I'm sure there will be plenty more, because there is a long-ass time until we get to Elder Scrolls 6. So,
yeah.
Yeah. But we'll be back to some lore-related stuff next week. And, yeah, that's about it. We'll see you guys next time.
All right, see you guys.